So the question today, why Bethel? Why is this church calling itself Bethel? How about we start with a little history? Back in 1979, this church got started. And Bob and Debbie Sims started this church. Their first actual Sunday was July 7th, 1979. And we probably know how many people were there and all that stuff. I didn't check all that out. Bob was connected with some of the pastors and churches that were connected with Calvary Temple in Fort Wayne. Calvary Temple during the Jesus movement exploded and grew, and it ended up with a bunch of Jesus freaks who went out and started churches. So we had a lot of Calvary Chapel of this and Calvary Chapel of that. We were Calvary Chapel of Defiance. And then there was Calvary Chapel of Auburn and Waterloo and Butler and Kendallville and Huntington, and the list goes on and on. Cherubusco. There were Calvary Chapels all over the place that had sprung up. There was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of momentum in that, and it was good. Lisa and I became part of Calvary Ministries because we were connected to a ministry in Richmond, Indiana. And there was a kind of a homeschooling, not a homeschooling, a school for wayward kids kind of a thing down there that we were connected to. And we ended up in 1985 at Camp Calvary. And we had known Dennis Kutzner, who was part of Calvary Ministries. And he had been the youth pastor for Lisa's uncle in Zanesville, Ohio. So there were just connections, and we ended up with that organization, and we're with them for a lot of years. At some point, after being, you know, involved in Calvary Chapel of Auburn, and then being asked to take a church in southern Indiana, in Bicknell, Indiana, we were there 8 years. And some of you remember the story. Dennis Kutzner asked me at camp, are you interested in going to Defiance? And I look at him laughing and say, no, and just kept clapping my hands and singing the song. I wasn't a bit interested in going to Defiance. But that was on the 16th of July. On the 17th of August, I was told, you are the new pastor. On the 18th of August, my son was at two-a-days for a new football team that went to the state championship back in 1997. And so 21 years ago today, as I mentioned earlier, Lisa and I were moving boxes. It was our 19th anniversary, but we were moving boxes. And now we've lived over half of our married life here. And, you know, I really didn't want to live where it was this flat. But I love it. I love it. I love it. And I love you. And I love this church. About that same time when we moved up here, a lot of churches were doing this thing. Denominational churches were changing their names. They were changing their names because they didn't want to always be identified with what people thought a certain denominational name meant necessarily. They kind of wanted to have, and there was this big thing where we're going to name ourselves something that has to do with the community or something like that. And it was kind of a movement across the country. And I think it had some benefit. It helped people get into churches that they might not otherwise go into because, oh, I'm not going to that church. They're a Baptist church, or they're a this church, or they're that church. All of a sudden, people were going to churches that they didn't know had a Wesleyan background or a Baptist background. And it made for some adjustment. And all of the CMI churches, Calvary Ministries International churches, decided they were going to start doing the same thing. So there was a Calvary Chapel down in Florida. There was a church that called itself Countryside Christian Center because they lived in Countryside, which was a suburb of Tampa. So all of our churches started doing that, was the next thing that kind of happened. We had these denominations with non-denominational names and non-denominational churches that were you know, playing with their nomenclature and, you know, traditional churches that wanted to look less traditional. And our name, Calvary, was an interesting name because not only did we have it in Calvary Ministries, which was a, you know, Pentecostal charismatic full gospel kind of a network of churches, but it's funny to think about all the churches that are still to this day Calvary Baptist. A lot of Baptist churches were Calvary. And we had people come to our church that thought we would be Baptist. And some of them were not necessarily real happy about us not being Baptist. Come in looking for an organ and a hymnal, and they find some people singing some stuff off the wall and playing guitars. It was just weird. So all the chapels started renaming themselves, and we thought, well, why don't we do that? So in 1999, we started talking about it, and we came up with Harvest Life. Now, why did we come up with Harvest Life? Nobody knows exactly. I blame Eddie Jewell. He was here at the time. And we care about the harvest. We want to see souls saved. How many of you want to see souls saved? All right, good. And life is just a good thing. I mean, how many want to have life? Okay, some of you don't. Sure, you want to have life. Okay, and so there were a lot. The church in Waterloo Chapel changed its name to New Hope. And we were like, well, we could be New Life, but there was already a New Life in town, I think. I'm not sure. There had been a Word of Life, which was the church that I was pastoring in southern Indiana. It was Word of Life, and I really liked that name. But there had been a church in town that was Word of Life, and it had gone through some ups and some downs. And, you know, churches go through stuff sometimes. You're aware of that, right? Go through some things. So we didn't want to name ourselves Word of Life because that church was no longer in existence, but it would have been awkward. So we kicked it around. We came up with Harvest Life, and it was pretty good. And, you know, we had some real advantages back then when we renamed the church, because Route 24 ran right in front of our church. So a lot of people saw the new name and saw all that, and that was kind of cool. And so we tried to create, if you will, what they call in the business world, a brand. Get a brand, and people know who you are, what you're all about. It didn't help that I walked into, and you've heard me tell this story, I think, most of you. Some of you, I know you. Some of you have been with me 21 years. You've heard me tell some of this stuff way too many times. But I walked into Kmart when it used to exist, and this young man, I said, I need the pictures for Calvary Worship Center. And he says, okay, Calvary. And he goes over to the K's. And I'm like, it's spelled with a C. And he goes, oh, okay. And he goes over to the C's, and he's looking under C-O, like C-O-W, Calvary. I said, C-A-L, and he found it then. You know, he looked up. Because we used to take tests in school. You had to spell resurrection and Calvary and Golgotha and things like that. They don't do that in school anymore. You're not allowed to use Christian terminology. So the kid didn't know how to spell Calvary. He didn't even know what it was. And so that convinced us that we were maybe making a good choice at that time. And I think the name served us well. But a few years ago, a young person asked me, why are you named Harvest Life? And I was kind of like trying to explain it. And, I realized I don't have a really powerful explanation of why we call ourselves what we call ourselves. And that's when he said to me, because the first time I heard about it, all I could think of was as a church for farmers. And I thought, well, times they are changing. So I thought about it for a while. Now, just to make this a legal sermon, let's turn to Genesis chapter 35. I'm going to read a couple verses here to you. Genesis chapter 35. Because Bethel has some biblical background. And changing names has some biblical background. Genesis 35, verse 9 says, after Jacob returned from Padan Aram, God appeared to him again and blessed him. Okay, God appeared to him again. First of all, this is because this is the second time God appeared to him. The first time, he appeared to him. Does anybody know where he appeared to Jacob the first time? Well, the place was called Luz, L-U-Z, but he renamed it. And Jacob called the place where the ladder came down from heaven. Remember Jacob's ladder? And it says, God stood at the top of the ladder. By the way, I was studying this, and actually the original language probably more correctly is translated, and God stood beside him at the ladder. Interesting. God stood with Jacob. Anyway, he had seen God there. He changed the name of that place to Bethel. That was the name of the place that he renamed Luz, which means almonds. I don't know if that's got any significance, but he renamed it Bethel. So God appeared to him again and blessed him. And by the way, guess where he was this second time when God appeared to him? If you read the context of the chapter, he was at Bethel. He'd come back to Bethel. He said, your name is Jacob, but you will no longer be called Jacob. Your name will be Israel. So he named him Israel. Israel, some people think, means a prince with God. Some people think it means contends with God. The fact of the matter is, Jacob did wrestle with the angel of God. And some people think the angel of God was actually more than just an angel. I don't know all that. That's beyond me. But he got his name changed because he was a good wrestler, I guess. I don't know. Jacob, the name itself, originally meant supplanter. And what God was doing was he was changing, he was calling out something new in Jacob. Calling out something new in Jacob. Jacob, when he had the encounter with God at Bethel in chapter 28 of Genesis, was calling out something new in the place that he was at. And he set up a pillar of stone. He was recognizing something was changing. It was a transformational experience. Now think a bit with me. Transformation. Do we want to become more and more like God? Yes, we do. Does that mean we need to change our name every year? I hope not. It's a pain. But I think there are times when you can have something that you begin to declare over yourself. Abram became Abraham, father of many. And then he became the father of many. So today, we are reorienting ourselves to call ourselves Bethel, which means house of God. And that's what Jacob said the first time he met with God. He was taking a nap, he woke up, and he realized, he said, I didn't know it, but God was here. Sometimes I'm that guy. Sometimes I'm not paying attention. And then I realize, God's with me. What I want to try to do with this congregation is help all of us become more and more aware of what we carry, the presence that we carry with us, the person who lives in us and walks through us and does miracle signs and wonders through everybody who he can. And he wants to do those things through you. You are called to be a difference maker. And as I preached back in February of this year, on the 4th of February, you are a house of God. You are a Bethel. So we're reestablishing, if you will, our identity and trying to make it a little bit clearer about who we are. Now, again, why Bethel? Well, I find it interesting that some of the initial members of our church came from a church called Bethel. If you were part of Bethel, raise your hand. Look at that. Several people were part of Bethel. Now, Bethel went through one of those things that sometimes churches go through. I mentioned that earlier. And all of a sudden, Bethel was no more. And the details of all that are important. But here we are with some people who were part of that have now come full circle. And interestingly enough, this text that we had today is where God had called Jacob back out of Paddan Aram and brought him back to Bethel. So he had come full circle and had another fresh encounter with God. I believe God wants us to have more fresh encounters with him. Amen? So I think that God's doing something interesting here. Second thing about Bethel, besides the fact that we've got some history with it, this meaning of house of God is easy to remember. If somebody asks you, why did your church change their name? Tell them, because I'm a house of God. And together we are the house of God. And we want to recognize that God is living in us. And God living in us means something more than sometimes we think about. Sometimes we need to really recognize, I have God in me. Like, there's enough of God in me to move mountains. There's enough of God in me to walk on water. There's enough of God in me to do something amazing. And there's enough of God in me to be there even with the little things. I'm going to share a little thing, in a sense, with you a little bit later, a testimony that I think is kind of neat. And I hope some of you maybe will share some testimonies today. So second, this meaning house of God is important to us. We need to recognize that God is doing something in this house. And God's doing something in this house. For those who are only listening and are only, you know, can't see me moving my hands around, God's doing something in the house, our gathering, and God is doing something in me, the house. And as much as I appreciate this building, and God is here, because you can't go anywhere where God's not anyway, right? Yeah, God is here. Even when we're not here, God's here. But I think in a real sense, God's more here when we're here. Because there's more pieces of what God is doing and more momentum of how God's moving because he's moving in us. Third, we are connected to a well-known church called Bethel. I think that's significant and it's valuable. People from Bethel have come here in the past. And when they've come here, they've said, there's something about this place. It reminds us of home. I feel honored to hear that. But I don't know that I should take it so much as an honor, but just as a sign. If they feel like something from what they know, where they're at, is happening here, then it reveals something to us about who we are and what we're supposed to be doing. I don't believe that every single church has to look exactly the same. In fact, I'm glad they don't. I think it's good that there are different churches doing different things. And yet Jesus spoke to the Father in the 17th chapter of John, and he said, Father, I pray that they will be one as you and I are one. I want us to be a church that has the attitude of we want to be the one, but not the only one. We want to be the one church, and we want to give the heart of oneness and share that with other churches so that though they may do things a lot different than us, we can still be one with them. There's a lot more going on today in communities like ours where churches are connected. It's a lot better today than it was 30 years ago. When I was first pastoring, 35 years ago. I remember going into my first pastor's meeting. Boy, you talk about a bunch of territorial guys. It was in Athens, Ohio. And those guys were just, it was like every meeting we went to, somebody was going to pick a fight over something. How do you baptize? You know, things like that. Just goofy. We have a lot more unity and unanimity with God's people today than we've ever had. But I believe it's going to get better. One of the things that I encourage us to do as a church is to make sure that we speak well of other churches, that we speak well of other believers, that we don't try to think of ourselves as being the ones who have really got it going on. Sorry about your luck in the other churches. Now, we've got what we're supposed to have going on. Nothing more, nothing less. And it doesn't make anybody else any less. And it doesn't make us better. We made this name change. I didn't make an effort to go to the newspaper and have a big ta-da Sunday. Because I don't want anybody to leave the place that they belong to hang out with us because we got a pretty sign out front. I don't want to do that. We're not only connected with some of the same, if you will, spiritual DNA that Bethel in Redding, California has and some other churches now that I've become familiar with There's a Bethel in Cleveland. There's a Bethel in Valparaiso. There are other churches that don't carry the Bethel name, but they are also part of the whole system. And really, we don't have a system. We do have a Bethel Leadership Network. Some of you know I'm part of that now. I was able to announce that on February 4, that officially I'm considered part of the Bethel Leadership Network. It's the most organized we've been, and it's still not that organized. And we're nervous about organization because we don't want organization to become the reason that we do what we do. But I think it's good that we are identifying with Bethel and Reading. I've had several occasions now where I've talked to people about what we're doing and the name change and that kind of thing. And when there are people who are aware, and a lot of people are aware, of Bethel and Reading, they're going, oh, so you're kind of connected to that. Yeah, we are. And they're like, oh, okay. And they have this nodding, like, oh, I know what that would look like if I came to your church. And see, that's one of the things that is important about a name. It is kind of valuable that people, when they come, they kind of have an understanding of what it might look like to be there. Now, the funny thing is, when I first came here, I mentioned earlier, we sang songs off the wall. I think we were about the only church in town that sang songs off of the wall, you know, put them up on the wall for people to read. Now, I don't know if you can go to a church in town that doesn't put them up on the wall. Not sure. Maybe you know. You can tell me later. All I know is we have been part of this movement that's connected with Bethel and Bethel music and all the things that go with that. And people are more familiar with that. So now they're going like, oh, okay. I know what you guys are going after. I understand what your angle is on it. And some people think that's really cool. I will tell you, there'll be a few people when they find out that our name is Bethel, they'll probably like us less. That's okay. I'm not going to get worried about that. Recently, my daughter-in-law, Casey, her grandfather, who lives here in Defiance, passed away. And they asked if they could use our fellowship hall for the funeral dinner, and we said yes, and they were very kind and gave the church a really nice gift, and that we really appreciate that. And when the funeral was over at the funeral home in town, I think they were at Schaefer, but I'm not sure, somebody from the leadership of the funeral home got up and said, now that the service is over, or however they say that, we will be going out to, I wrote it down so I could get it right here. We were going out to Harvest Fellowship Life Church. Harvest Fellowship Life Church. I think it's probably easier for us to just say Bethel, isn't it? I bet it'll be easier for them to say Bethel. If people get to know that that's the name of the church out here, they'll be like, oh, yeah, Bethel. There are people who, I've been here 21 years. We've been called Bethel Church for 19 years. They still don't know where Harvest Life is. Maybe this will help us a little bit. It wouldn't hurt. And maybe it'll help people figure out who we are. And I think Bethel will be easier. It's certainly less syllables. Last, Bethel now has special meaning to this house. And the way we've put together the name Bethel and what we're doing has now special meaning to this house that it currently doesn't have anywhere. I think it should. And if somebody wants to use it, I'm not going to say, no, we own that. You can't use that. But Mark mentioned it earlier. And every sermon that I've preached in the last 4 weeks, I've ended with the words, be the one who... Last week we were talking about receiving. Be the one who receives. Because in the midst of all this, trying to figure this out and talking to our leadership and trying to decide if we were going to do this or not, whether it made sense or not, this thing popped out. And you can see it. You can see it on the mug. You can see it on the hat. You can see it on the shirt. I won't wear a Bethel shirt every week, by the way. But I thought I would today. By the way, if you ordered a shirt, Joan will have your shirts ready at the end of the thing. And if you want a mug, you have to order the hats. We don't have any of those. If you want any of that stuff, and again, we're not trying to make a bunch of money here, but if we can help pay for the, New sign out front, some things like that's not a bad idea. How many think it's good to pay our bills? That'd be good. All right. But we have this be the one thing that appears inside the name Bethel, the way we put it together, be the one. I think that is probably the one thing that I hope you will know the most if somebody asks you. What's going on at that church? Here's what's going on at that church. That church might be another good name to have, by the way, but it was already taken. Seriously, there's a church in the United States called That Church. I know what they're probably like us. Yeah, I go to that church. Oh, you go to that church. Anyway, when someone asks you, say, I go to a church that wants to equip me to be the one. And, you know, you can almost add anything to that. Maybe we need to fire up the Dave Ramsey course again so you can be the one who pays your bills. Maybe we need to do some teaching like a series on love so you can be the one who loves your neighbor, who loves the stranger, who loves yourself. Oh. What if everything that we do is aimed at you being the one God called you to be? Being the one who does the stuff that God wants you to do. And I love some of these churches that have got tremendous administrative people and know how to do everything, and they put together these big programs and do all these cool things and everything. But you know what is missing sometimes? Sometimes we need Christians who are just the one wherever they are, just doing what they should do in that place where they are the one. I believe each of us is called to greatness. I believe each of us has a lot of little individual parts that we can play and little things that we can do that can make a huge difference. And I want this to be a church that equips you to have an amazing ministry, to go out and do great things, and not just come to church and do your ministry, but outside the four walls, do your ministry. A lot of churches, I hate to say this, I think God's going to make an adjustment in this, so I'm not mad at him, but a lot of churches get people involved in a ministry that they come to the church to do all the time. And I'm not even saying that's wrong. A lot of great stuff gets done because of that, but I would like to not only have stuff that we do when we get here. Close that, please. There we go. Time's up. I forgot to turn it down. I would like to not only have stuff happening here, but I would like to have way more stuff happening out there. I've been talking about this now for a long time, since I first got affected by that guy, Bill Johnson, back in 2005. Because it made sense to me that we were not supposed to just get people ready to go to heaven, but we were actually supposed to get heaven into people. And I want to get heaven into you. And I want to get this idea of you being the one, the house of God, the one who does what God gives you to do. Be that one. So I'm going to share a little testimony with you now. A guy I've met a couple of times, he and his wife have a ministry, and they were doing a lot of ministering in the Ohio area, and I think they're from Ohio, but they've moved to Reading. And their names are Greg and Jane Moore. And Greg posted this. He's out in Reading now, and a lot of you know Reading had fires. And so it's been a tough season out there trying to clean up after all the fires, and it's been a little hard on the town. And they're pulling together the best they can, but imagine, you know, how that might feel if a big chunk of the surrounding area was all burned up around where you live, and you knew a lot of, almost everybody knows somebody. Bethel is not, you know, a small church, but it isn't in a huge town. I think Shasta County has like 100,000 people in it. I think Reading is considered 80,000. So he's living out there, and this is what he posted on Facebook. He said, "Today, while running errands to the hardware store, I made a stop by one of my favorite places to get a diet soda, Circle K, because they have the best crushed ice. While I was walking in, I just felt the Lord nudge me with a thought to change the atmosphere in the store. I typically try to give at least a couple of random people a greeting and a quick hi, how are you, when I'm out and about. You see, many people have felt depressed and fearful due to all the fires in our town, and I refuse to buy into the lie of depression, anxiety, and helplessness. I was in a lower income, high crime area. What did I do? I simply greeted everyone that I saw with a very simple, positive compliment. To a young mother, feeling she needed to rush because she was trying to put a lid on her drink cup while juggling a baby and a toddler, and me waiting, I told her, "Take your time. You have two beautiful children to juggle, and you're being a great mom." She was shocked and looked at me with a huge grin and said, "Thank you so much. I needed that." Without reading on for just a second here, you see what he saw? If he had been in a hurry, goodness gracious, this lady's holding everything up with these two kids. What's she thinking? Instead, he saw a mom who just needed a little encouragement. I noticed other people around started to smile. Then a lady with weird tattoos all over the place, piercings and dark makeup, and a somewhat tattered t-shirt came up to fill up her cup. I said, "Isn't this the best crushed ice in the world?" She replied with a straight face, "I come to get it from my mom. She likes it." I said, "Wow, what a great daughter to do that for her. The littlest things can make a huge difference in someone's life, can't they?" Her face changed into a big grin. She nodded and said, "Yeah, I guess they can." As I looked around, there were three other guys close by listening, as I tend to talk loud at times. Craig and I have something in common there. As I looked, they all had big smiles on their faces. I gave them that guy upward head nod, and they each smiled. Yeah, like us guys do sometimes. I then went to the stone-faced cashier. He said, "Is that all?" As though I was bothering him. I replied, "No, I want to compliment you on how clean your store is, especially for this time of day. You're doing a great job." His eyes got big. He stood straight up and said with a smile, "Well, thank you, sir. Thank you." I paid, and as I walked out, I turned and looked around. Everyone I saw now had a smile, and you could feel the shift in the place from the mundane to gladness. I really felt the joy and presence of the Lord fill the place. While leaving, the first young lady was putting her kids in the car. She made sure I saw her, and she mouthed, "Thank you." I nodded and jumped in my car and drove all the way home with a big grin on my face. 4 hours later, still feeling the love of the Father, I felt that I was to share my experience. If we simply take time to share joy, peace, and the love of Jesus in the most simplistic form, we can change atmospheres from the mundane to the joyful, from helplessness to that of hope, from dark into light. I challenge everyone to release a smile and a quick compliment. It won't only lift their spirits, but it makes you feel like Jesus is saying, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Isn't that cool testimony? See, here's the thing. In the end, Jesus will not look at what church we were a part of. He won't say, "Were you part of Harvest Life? Or was it Bethel?" Pastor can't make up his mind. In the end, he'll look at us each as individuals, won't he? We'll walk up to him and he'll say, "Well done, good and faithful servant. See, I want you to be Bethel. I want you to be Bethel everywhere you go. I want you to be the house of God, and I want you to be the one, and I want you to be that one everywhere you go, so that everybody you walk up to has the possibility of having you treat them as though they were running into Jesus himself.